Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
The Financial Exchange, weekdays 10 to noon, 1120 a.m. WBNW.
The following program is wholly sponsored and produced by Stu Taylor on Business, which is responsible for its content. The opinions and information provided on today's show are those of the guests and or their respective companies and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of this station. It is strongly recommended that all listeners conduct their own due diligence on all companies mentioned and or seek out the advice and counsel of a financial professional. The guests on this show may pay a fee to appear on the show and are not affiliated with the show in any manner. This is Stu Taylor on Business. Now, Stu Taylor.
All right, welcome. Hoping you're all well today as we proceed with I think another great show for you, and we'll open with an important subject. I'd like to jump into important subjects right away. Not that they don't all have a certain importance or essence, but this one does. Joining us is Stephen M. Bauman. It's spelled B-A-U-M-A-N-N. That's Stephen M. Bauman. He is the author of Be My Friend, A Parent and Child's Guide for Making Quality Friendship Choices. It is published by Zulon Press. You can go to zulonpress.com, barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com, or you can always Google Stephen M. Bauman and the name of the book, which is Be My Friend. And when we talk about parent-child relationships, I really don't know too many more important subjects, so let's get right to it. And welcome, Stephen, to the show. It's nice to have you on. Just a little bit about your background and what's so special about this book.
Well, Stu, thank you so much for having me on here today. I'm excited to share what's been on my heart for a number of years and observations about friendship building and how it's impacted, obviously, my own life and observations working with kids. I've been a school teacher, a substitute teacher, which was probably the most eye-opening, and many other aspects of working with kids. And my wife and I, we volunteer. And so it's just been an outgrowth of those observations.
And you know, you...
I just want to thank some very special people in my life, because if I fail to do this, I will have failed. My mom, who's made this thing possible, Nancy Verdon, she's the expert of friendship making and building, and so I've just learned so much from her and owe everything. My mother-in-law, Judy, she pestered me on this book until it happened, and if it weren't for that pestering, I don't think I would ever have done it. And my stepmom, Linda, she's just been an encouragement. Of course, my dad. They have just been key people. And finally, and not least, my wife, Jenny, and my best friend. So
right, I want to get right to the book because we only have limited time here.
Sure.
And if you could tell me the distinguishing characteristics, what kind of sets this book apart? What was the motivation for writing it?
Well, this book really is about not just how to make friends, but it's the process of making quality friends. Parents make two mistakes, I believe. One is they micromanage. They are on top of their kids so that they can't make a bad decision, fearful of the bad influences of friends all over the place. And so kids never learn to discern nor how to proceed in making friends. That would be the first mistake. And then when it comes to in high school and so forth, they rebel and choose every wrong friend just despite their parents. The other mistake is that they just throw their hands in the air and say, well, I can't do anything with my kids, so let them make their own decisions. And we don't do that with when it comes to poison and food. We'd never say, well, let my kid just figure it out on their own. We would hide, obviously, any rat poison or things that could harm our kids and give them the right. And yet we don't do what I think is the third and best option, is to teach kids how to make the right choices and give them discernment capabilities. So that's really the crux of the book, is giving parents and kids a tool to take the me versus them, the parent versus child, and make it parent and child working together to formulate and build a group of friends that can hopefully last a lifetime, and that will build them up and support them in their life.
And you can't have a tyrannical atmosphere at home, and you can't, on the other hand, leave everything entirely up to the kids to figure out where to go. So does this become a collaborative process between the parent and the child in order to get him or her on the right course?
It certainly does, and I think you've touched on it. It's working together. Children at age 2, 3, we have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. They are learning skills, but they're in the process. And to make them figure it out on their own, or to overreact and overwork it, is also a mistake. And so working together as kids and parents grow together and develop friendships, I think that's the key. And this book, Be My Friend, really is a working process and something that can be functionally workable, that they can combine those efforts together between parent and child.
Stephen M. Baum, and the book is Be My Friend, a Parent and Child's Guide for Making Quality Friendship Choices, publishers Zulon, that's spelled X-U-L-O-N. Stephen, I think how difficult, maybe how more difficult it is than ever in past generations. I know every generation says it, but with the influx and the lowering of the bar in terms of morals, the influx of drugs in our society, single parents, it's more and more and more difficult. And you combine that with the influence of infatuation, how kids are infatuated with other kids and want to form an alliance, or, quite frankly, peer pressure from other kids. How do you suggest they combat those destructive forces?
Well, there are a number of ways. Parents need to be involved with their kids. I mean, that's obvious. But it's harder to do it than to say it. It means intentionally putting aside the television set. It means for both parent and child, it means spending that time when, oh, I'm tired, I've had a full day, I just can't do it. I come home and last thing I want to do is deal with my kids who've been whining and I just want to disappear. But that's where the parent cannot abdicate the responsibility. They have to be involved and they have to take intentional effort to spend time with their kids. And, you know, I compare it to a playground. Every single child, every single person, every single relationship that a person ever has in their entire lifetime, imagine everybody in that giant playground, thousands of people, and your child has to navigate every single person in relationship. Who's going to be a friend? Who's going to be an enemy? And what are those people going to be like? Are they going to be conductors when they grow up, salesmen, musicians, drug addicts, involved in horrible activity, even the unthinkable of bringing a semi-automatic into a classroom? This is becoming more commonplace and sickeningly so. And how do we help our children amongst that giant playground that I bring up here as an illustration? How are we going to help our kids make those wise choices for kids that will be there possibly for a lifetime as a friend?
How much do you have the infiltration of religious education, you can call it spiritual too, value-based? How do you combine the religious component with the pragmatism?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I think a lot of the listeners that will say, well, Christianity, it's a negative term. And as they think of the Inquisition and Crusades, and they think of all these negative things, and even people that have burned them, and I've been burned too. I've been hurt by people that, you know, I could blame God for it. I could blame Christianity for it. But I think what we have to do is, who is the person that started it all, and revisiting who Jesus was? And this person of Jesus, he wasn't about burning his neighbor. He wasn't about putting a knife in the back or gossiping or being disloyal and unloving. He was all the things about even forgiveness. psychologists today are telling us we need to learn to forgive. There's healing properties in that. Well, Jesus taught that 2,000 years ago. So the person of Jesus, I think, is an excellent role model. And if we had friends that were loving and caring and didn't hold grudges, I mean, what kind of friends would we have be today? We'd be very rich people. So I think religion, while you know, I want to throw out the negativity of that, I do want to focus on the person of Jesus. And I am a Christian. I write from a Christian perspective. But I think there's even an atheist can gain a lot of value in understanding that role and in modeling, following his model.
Just in closing here, we have less than a minute. What in the area of family and relationships, what distinguishes this book from others?
Well, it gives a couple of comparisons. Kids can use and parents can use the 12 boats. I've compared relationships and boats, like a tugboat is a servant-hearted person. I have a friend, Vicky, that over the years, just servant-hearted and I don't say that in a bad way, but in a way that she'd just listen and care, and I could pour out some of my frustrations with her. And a friend of mine who I compared to a sailboat, you know, just love the outdoors. He helped bring me into a whole new group of friends. And friends like this who have just made a difference in my life, I compare to boats. And so kids and parents can take the 12 boats that are in the book and plot their personalities in a graph. And then the priorities of Jesus, the inner ring, the close ring, and then the next ring, the outer ring, and then the exterior ring. Those were his disciples. And when you put those two graphs together, it looks like a dartboard.
All right, on that note, I wonder if you finish the sentence. Be my friend, a parent and child's guide for making quality friendship choices. Stephen M. Bauman, and that's published by Zulon Press. Thanks for this valuable information for us.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
Hey, Bob, how's business? Is the new website helping?
Not good. I can't figure out how to get the website finished. How did you do it?
Easy. I called web.com. They built my website for free. Then they promoted it on all the search engines.
Like Google, Yahoo, and Bing?
Exactly. And web.com has helped grow my business so much, I had to bring on new staff.
Call now, 1-800-535-9652. That's 1-800-535-9652.
There is no upfront charge for building the website, after which the ongoing fee applies. Rights to the website are relinquished upon cancellation unless otherwise purchased.
U2 America TV, featuring original live programs created with you in mind. Engage with shows through social media and the U2 America app. America Trends with Dr. Gina covers the trending topics of the day and allows viewers to interact with the show. Sully's Biz Brew is business with a barroom slant, delivered with a twist. Visit U2America.com to find a channel near you. U2 America, red, white, and you.
Have you heard? Proactive Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer. Give us a call at 800-726-1031, because we're going to let a million people try Proactive Plus risk-free and get two free gifts and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactive Plus now, and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactive Plus, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 800-726-1031. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV.
Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait. Call 800-726-1031. That's 800-726-1031.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
BizTalkRadio.com.
The Legal Exchange, Saturdays 1 to 2 p.m., AM 1120, WBNW.
This is Joe Kern from CNBC Squawk Box. Just did an interview with Stu Taylor. Stu is helping keep America great.
All right, we return, and joining us right now on a subject that also has significance religious-wise, and joining us is Joan T. Broussard. I want to spell the last name if you need to Google her. It's B-R-O-U-S-S-A-R-D. The book is The Innkeeper's Wife, A Friendship Like No Other. It's published by Tate Publishing. You can go to Tate Publishing. Tapebooks.com, tapepublishing.com, amazon.com, and barnesandnoble.com. And I welcome you to the show. It's great to have you with us, Joan.
Well, thank you, Stu. It's great to be with you today.
The book, a little about your background, why you wrote it, and what it's about.
Well, why I wrote it, I wanted to share an experience in prayer that can lead to a book of this type. I went on a 8-day silent retreat in Spain about five or six years ago and had an experience during a prayer method called imaginative contemplation, where you put yourself in the scene of a scripture story as either one of the characters, one of the people there, or as an observer. And in this instance, I was contemplating and reflecting on the nativity of Jesus and imagined Joseph and Mary coming to the inn, asking for a room and being told they didn't have a room, they just had a stable. And in this experience, I heard that innkeeper's wife scold him really bad for sending that obviously pregnant woman to the stable. So after she fusses him really good, she runs up to the stable and befriends that young woman and ends up being midwife to her that night.
How much research did you do for the book, and where did you derive most of the content from?
The content was really my own, not much research other than long years of journeying through the spiritual life and just becoming Christian, Catholic specifically, and just knowing the life of Jesus in my own faith walk. You know, we don't know a whole lot. We don't know anything really about the adolescent years of Jesus. So from a literary standpoint, you can kind of make up anything you want. And that's what I did. I wanted to give some insight to who the young person of Jesus and his early years. And he ended up, some circumstances arose, and this character, her name is Gertrude, the innkeeper's wife, ended up following that holy family all the way to Egypt and lived with them, and the story culminates actually at the cross, at the crucifixion of Jesus. She ends up being a lifelong friend of Mary and Joseph, and has an experience of living with this family. It ended up being a pretty remarkable story that kind of mirrors my own faith journey. You know, you want to come and accept Jesus in your life at some point, and sometimes it's hard because you want to stay, you know, in your own, what you think is your own controlling existence, but it's really not. She had quite an experience living with them. You know, we know from Scripture that they went, and Jesus' first miracle was that wedding at Cana, where he turned the wine and the water into wine. Well, in my story, the people who were holding the wedding were actually Gertrude's cousins. So I used Scripture, what we know, you know, from Scripture, and kind of put a little fictional slant on things to create some interest and make the make Mary and Joseph and Jesus and Gertrude, you know, come a little more alive, have some skin on them so you could relate.
Joan, are there any other messages to this book, like 1, 2, 3? I'd like people to get this out of it, or that out of it, other than what you said.
Okay. Well, what I'd like people to get out of it is it comes to trusting Jesus to be who he says he is. And if we just have a small amount of faith, he'll give us the grace to get through whatever life throws at us. Her big motto in life was, and so is mine, is to just stand faithful amid all things that happen to us in life. And she was known to pray big, I like to say. People have asked me, what does pray big mean? And my definition for it is not just some casual prayers that you throw, you know, throw around and hope it reaches his ears, but to pray with all your heart, pray with your core, pray with meaning and intensity and fervor. You know, it's like, don't just pray casually. Pray big. Pray what you mean, and, you know, mean what you pray to a real God. Yeah.
Gina, what have been people's reactions after having read the book? I'm very curious to know that.
Thank you for asking that. The reaction I've been getting from nearly everyone is how they can relate to to this character, Gertrude. They see themselves in her. Initially, when you first meet her in the book, she's pretty rough. She kind of scolds that innkeeper husband of hers really strong, has a strong mouth, big voice, kind of hot-tempered, and is really angry when she sees injustice. But living with Mary and following their example taught her to kind of calm that down a little bit and have some faith and be more loving as a first reaction to being more, you know, too intense and wanting to, eat you up before understanding where you might be coming from. So the reaction has been people relate to her and her conversion story that, you know, plays out throughout the book.
What was the most difficult part of writing this book, or was there no difficulty?
Actually, it wasn't hard to write. I've been working and thinking about living with this character for about 8 years, I suppose. The part of the Last Supper and leading up to the Passion of Christ was actually as the most difficult part, because you have to realize what, you know, our participation in that as Christians. But it actually wasn't very hard to write. It actually almost wrote itself. I just asked Gertrude, so what are you going to do, you know, for the Last Supper? And she actually, in the story, goes and helps set the table for the Last Supper. And then later, when Jesus is crucified, and as Christians, we know he was resurrected. But before he ascended to heaven, he appeared to the apostles. Well, in my book, he also appeared to Gertrude. And she had a chance to ask him some of the questions we'd all want to ask him. So what's the deal with that supper you had? What's that all about? What was the point of that? And, you know, she asked him some things, you know, with the kind of voice, talk before you think kind of attitude she had. And asked him some of the questions we'd all want to know.
All right. On that note, thank you for a very detailed analysis of the book, The Innkeeper's Wife, A Friendship Like No Other, written by Joan T. Broussard and published by Tate Publishing. It's been a pleasure having you on, Joan.
Thank you, Stu. Appreciate having time with you this morning.
All right. We're going to take a break and come back with another great guest, Jonah Berger. Invisible Influence, The Hidden Force.
Summer fun? I owed the IRS $10,000.
The IRS garnished my wages.
They put a lien on my house.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency in the world. They do not give up until you pay.
I couldn't sleep. We were being audited. I called Tax Solutions Now, and a great big weight was lifted off my shoulders.
I called Tax Solutions Now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Tax Solutions Now had my wage garnishment lifted in 48 hours.
Tax Solutions Now can get you help. Our agents know the rules, can stop the pain, and get you the best deal. We connect you with a team of former IRS agents and tax professionals who will get the IRS off your back.
We saved our home and overcame the most powerful collection agency in the world.
Call Tax Solutions Now. Time is running out.
Call 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370, 800-605-5370, call 800-605-5370.
Do you owe $10,000 or more on at least two federal student loans? Then you may qualify for new programs offered by the Department of Education. These programs can reduce your interest, lower your payments, and possibly qualify you for loan forgiveness. If you have $10,000 or more and at least two federal student loans and currently not in school, you may qualify for one of these programs. Call now to check your eligibility. Student loan advisors are standing by to help you determine if you qualify for these new programs. They can help you reduce your interest, lower your payment, and even forgive a portion of your student loan debt. Take control of your financial future. Make this free 5-minute free call now to Nationwide Student Loans and learn how you can reduce your student loan debt.
800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588.
This is a national health care alert from the Health Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You could qualify for a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost to you. Get free delivery, and all the paperwork is handled by our accredited suppliers at no charge to you. So if you're on Medicare and have knee pain, don't wait. You may qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost. Friendly agents are standing by 24/7 to help you. We also have other pain-relieving braces, too, for your shoulder, ankle, or back. You may be eligible to get these items and more at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Our friendly representatives are standing by now to help you, so please call now.
Call 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301. Again, 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301.
BizTalkRadio.com.
The Legal Exchange, Sundays 9 to 10 a.m., AM 1120, WBNW.
This is Governor Mike Huckabee. Whether you're in Beantown or the rest of America, I'm sure you know that if it's the Red Sox, it's Boston. But if it's business, it's Stu Taylor on business.
All right, we are back with our second guest of the day, and Amy Whitaker. Great day today. Some great business education. She's a writer, an artist, a teacher. She has an MBA from Yale. I won't hold that against her, and an MFA in painting from the Slade School of Fine Art at the University College in London. Sorry about that. And she's very accomplished as a writer. Her new book is Art Thinking. That's A-R-T, Art Thinking, How to Carve Out Creative Space in a World of Schedules, Budgets, and Bosses. And it is published in hardcover by Harper Business. Amy, welcome. Good morning. It's great to have you on.
Thanks so much, Stu. I'm so happy to be on.
Well, the first thing I thought of when I looked at this is two things that are so contradictory in my own personal life and for a lot of people who generally excel maybe at one skill or two. You come from the creative artistic world as well as a solid business environment. It's a huge schism, I think, in my life. I've made it work without it, but it's kind of an unusual perspective that you take here, but yet I think one that is pragmatic and makes a lot of sense. Having said that, what's the book about? Why'd you write it, and whom is it for?
Yeah, so I mean, I think you're exactly right. I think the book is about how art and business go together. So they are at odds and dependent on one another at the same time, which I think we can all relate to. We probably also know people who are like that as well, kind of at odds and you're dependent on them. So the book came about for me because I got an MBA. Thanks for not holding it against me. And
no. About a year... it wasn't the MBA. It was Yale.
No, it was the Yale. I understand. You was quick. I'm sure you've beat us at football many times. So I got an MBA, and then a year later, I had a lot happen in my personal life. My father died suddenly, and I felt disconnected from my own creative side. I had studied painting and political science in college. So I went for it and took a leap and got an MFA in painting. And so for a while, I felt like a very kind of exotic or strange or narratively incoherent person. And then over time, I realized that actually what I was experiencing was an extreme version of what all of us experience, which is that we live in the midst of one of the largest market economies of all time. But creativity is also innately human and one of the most exciting things that any of us can show up in our life with. And so I wanted to think about how they go together and how really you make space within the market for open-ended exploration. It's kind of like the market economy is a giant ocean.
Yeah.
And it's about how to build a boat inside it that works for you.
I must say, really interesting. How about bringing the creative thinking process and the artistic world into business? But what about someone maybe like me who I don't see as being artistic? I guess I have a certain creativity. I don't want to be too harsh on myself, but how do you make someone who doesn't have that makeup and maybe convert them? Or is this something that's instinctive, it's intuitive, it's intrinsic? You can't really develop these qualities that you have.
I am definitely a person who thinks that everyone is an artist. I definitely know a lot of people who will tell me they can't draw a stick figure, but I think everyone has ways that they show up in the world that are inventive and resourceful. I used to host a cookie decorating party. I own a cookie cutter shaped like Elvis Presley. I'm a Memphis native. And I'm telling you, you cannot believe how creative and elaborate the cookies were that were made by the bankers and the lawyers. I think that what's really happening is that we have this idea of the myth of artistic genius, that we all have to embody a story that's exactly like Steve Jobs' story. And the message of the book is that, you know, those people had a before picture to their creativity. They were in the weeds. Things were messy and uncertain. And that's the part of it that's open to all of us.
Yeah, you talk in the book here, and if I am taking this out of context, correct me, but is it fair to say, as I paraphrase, that process matters more than the end product? First of all, is that an accurate statement? Because
yes,
if it isn't,
no,
there won't be a follow-up. Is that accurate?
I completely agree with that, yes.
All right, these aren't my feelings necessarily, but what kind of a corporate what would be the viewpoint from the corporate world? I don't want to pick on anyone, but maybe you can pick on Goldman Sachs or some of these companies who define success as the ultimate client acceptance and ultimately translating on ROI to dollars and cents. Wouldn't they kind of contradict the statement?
Well, so one of the main ideas in the book is that if you're thinking about art in a much broader, more Swiss Army knife way, a work of art is something that's not an act of going from point A to point B, but inventing point B in any area of life. So I would be the first person to say that there is a time and place just to go from A to B. I hugely admire people who are able to execute on projects. There are certainly roles like being a pilot or a surgeon where going from A to B safely is the most important thing. But I think even in those moments, there is a certain amount of creativity that's really a form of independent thinking. So when I say process is more important than outcome, obviously outcome matters, and we have to find ways to build creative process within performance-driven cultures, which is covered in a part of the book. But I think that there's a lot of space for talking about rigor and generosity of the moment of making something. Because even if you succeed wildly as a banker at Goldman Sachs and you build an absolutely beautiful work of art financial model, you still had to do that kind of one foot in front of the other over a period of time. And I would argue that there's actually quite a lot of creativity and resourceful thinking that goes into many parts of the finance world. Some parts of it people don't like. It's a little too creative for their taste. But I think that what we're really talking about is not art in the sense of a painting on the wall, but art in the sense of bringing your full resources as a person and your character and judgment and originality and independent thinking to bear. And that dovetails with a lot of the conversations in leadership and management about diversity of opinion on boards or more robust thought processes in groups, because there's so many different viewpoints represented.
I want to go back to what you said about going from A to D, but sometimes you have to go to A to B. You've got to get it right at every point, starting with A, if you're a pilot or a surgeon. So does your paradigm, your business model hold for all, are there exceptions? Can't be a learning process in the sense of experimentation when you're in a situation where people's lives are at stake.
Right. Well, I think what we're talking about is that when you're going from A to B, so you're executing in the known world, you're able to do that because at some point prior, someone invented the point B that you're executing toward. So all of these things exist in a portfolio. I think one of the larger frameworks of the book is that we have to think in terms of portfolios of risky and less risky projects. So one of my favorite stories in the book is about Thomas Fogarty, who invented the balloon catheter. He did it because he was a self-professed juvenile delinquent who had to be busy or supervised and got a job in a hospital. And there was a moment when he had his mentor, a guy named Dr. Cranley, use the balloon catheter for the first time. So you have to imagine how risky this was. This was a time when to remove a blood clot, this was in the 50s and early 60s, you opened up the entire length of an artery. Many people died. Many people had limbs amputated. And this guy had to take a risk on a device that was put together by a kid. He was by that time in medical school. who had figured out how to tie the finger of a latex glove to a urethral catheter using fly fishing knots that he learned while literally jumping out of the window to cut school. So you have to imagine Dr. Cranley in the operating room risking using that device for the first time, risking minimally invasive surgery and a tiny incision to pull a clot back out using the balloon as opposed to opening up the artery. And that is an inventing point B moment. So he didn't do that all the time, but he risked that because he had seen so much loss of life or limb based on the prior technology. So the idea of the book is that these things exist all at once, that it's not a binary, that there's a time and a place to go through the pilot's checklist and to land the plane safely. And there's another time and a place, and this is also a story from the introduction, where something goes wrong with the plane and it's your creative resourcefulness that allows you to avert a disaster. So I think it's really that we need to be able to have a conversation about both of these things at the same time, about how to make risk calculation.
We're going to take a break. I'd like to have you come back, all right, after this segment, during the break?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay, great. We're going to have Amy Whitaker rejoin us. The book is Art Thinking, How to Carve Out Creative Space in a World of Schedules, Budgets, and Bosses, a book that I certainly can use. It's published by Harper Business. Stay with us.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-463-1749. 800-463-1749. That's 800-463-1749. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 333-130. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC-32.
Are you married? Do you and your husband both have term life insurance? If you both don't, you should. You have a lot to protect. Call now, get a free quote for your husband, and while you're at it, get a quote for yourself too. Because you both need term life insurance. Call now. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. Rates are at all-time lows. We'll shop over 30 top-rated companies to get you the best possible rates. Term life insurance, it's the perfect way to protect the quality of your family's lifestyle. You and your husband both need term life insurance, so call now for a free quote for the both of you. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to a $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, that's 800-430-7570.
BizTalkRadio.com.
IMUS, morning 6 to 8 on WBNW, 1120 AM.
Hi, I'm Jim Cook, the brewer and founder of Sam Adams, and a friend of Stu Taylor. He's a great interviewer. He brings out the best in everybody that he talks to, and he helped me sell some books. Cheers.
All right. You know, sometimes I wish that some of the conversation that goes on during the break would be on air, but sometimes it happens and sometimes it just doesn't. And delightful conversation between segments with Amy Whitaker, who has a book out. And it's not because I had an enjoyable conversation. This is a book I think you'll want to read. Art Thinking, How to Carve Out Creative Space in a World of Schedules, Budgets, and Bosses. You'll learn a lot. I'm learning a lot during the course of this interview. I like one of the things that you talk about, Amy, in the book is, and this will offer encouragement and perhaps dispel some of the comments that I made earlier about people in terms of being creative. And you use, for examples, these aren't my examples, they're yours, Elvis Presley, Michael Jordan. I'll let you, Dr. Seuss, I'll let you pick up on those individuals and how it pertains to what you write about.
Right. Well, so one of the saving graces is that whenever you have that feeling in life, like, oh, I've failed miserably, or the bumper of my car is held on with duct tape, figuratively speaking, you have to realize that most people who are incredibly famous and successful felt that way when they were getting started. So the good news is that our judgment is terrible and pretty fallible, generally speaking. So there's an area of the book, Stu, I appreciate your bringing it up, that's just a laundry list of people who are super famous, but, you know, they, like Michael Jordan, was terrible at PE in high school. Fred Astaire, you know, got notes on one of his first auditions. He could kind of dance a little, but
every time Fred Astaire's name is mentioned, I get excited. Go ahead.
Right, right. You know, Stephen King, Dr. Seuss, people who got so many rejections, and they, you know, they just kind of took that mindset of unsuccessful yet undeterred. It's a joke with my sister. We always say that when we're looking for on-street parking in New York, that you're like, this has not worked out already, but I'm going to keep going. And the thing that makes that possible is sort of twofold. One is you just admit that you're in the weeds. That's just what it feels like to be in the middle of something. You know, we see everyone else's creative work after the fact when it's shiny and polished. And we experience our own when it's a mess and we're just one foot in front of the other. And the other piece of that is that it means that what's really important is knowing what I call a lighthouse question, or what it is that propels you forward. Like, what's the thing that you actually care about that you're trying to do? You know, are you trying to tell stories, or are you trying to sing? what is it that kind of compels you? Fred Smith, the founder of Federal Express, is also in that section as having gotten, I think, a C on the term paper that describes the idea that became Federal Express.
Yeah, it's some of these stories are amazing. I love stories like this. And let's move away, in a sense, from I don't want to strictly talk about it as being altruistic in nature, but we all have to hope, have creativity, and use the essence of what we have. We all of us greatly underuse the intellect and the emotional potential that we have. So, how do people get realistic in balancing trying to bring creativity into their lives, perhaps, you know, as something that is complementary to begin with, but then you got to worry about the financial security. I mean, we live in really difficult times, financially, economically. So how do you achieve the balance?
Definitely. So if I can just pick up on one thing you just said, Stu, and then answer your question. There's a lot of generosity that is asked of people making creative work. You're usually asked to put something out there before you get something back, and that is hard. That requires vulnerability and risk. And so I think anytime you're dealing with risk, you want to be thinking in investment terms. How much time do you have to lose? How much can you afford to risk exploring? So one of the stories in the book that's a little bit more personal is when I was coming out of art school, I had this phase where I was trying to figure out my career, and I had all these interesting freelancer projects, but it was sort of like I had all throw pillows and no couch. I was like, this is great, but I need, to your point, more economic stability. So I shifted and ended up getting a full-time job and then doing projects on the side. And I wrote this book while having a full-time job working as a professor. So I viscerally get a lot of these realities. In terms of just being an individual person, the place to start is to develop what I call a studio time practice. So just find an amount of time in your schedule that you can afford to lose. I would love it if people found one meeting they could skip every other week and turn that into your studio time practice. So a bit like generalized 20% time. And then come up with a project. It can be as simple as making a set of bookends or learning a recipe a week. Or it can be a research project, like ask the question, wouldn't it be cool if? About your working life, about your personal life, about something in the world in general, and then just start to follow up. Meet friends for a beer every other week and talk about it. So many companies I know started that way. But realize that you just start small and you just start in a conversational mode. And then over time, there are a lot of tools in the book for how to design a portfolio of projects around that and how to think in terms of managing the risk, not just that you'll fail, but that you'll succeed. How to think in terms of owning part of the upside that you create. And because I think a lot of us live in a production economy where we are paid a wage, but that it's nice if we can move to a hybrid economy where we're also investors in the work that we create. And the thing about inventing point B is that by definition, you don't know the value of what you're making ahead of time. So owning a fraction of it is a much more appropriate financial arrangement. So I'm a huge proponent of equity stakes, royalties, other ways of kind of being part of the increase in value that you contribute to.
All right. I wish we had more time, but I don't have time to go down this course with you. But if you read this book, you'll be able to learn this, as Amy Whitaker has written, the seven mindsets that make up the art thinking framework. A lot of substance here, good creative content. The book is Art Thinking, How to Carve Out Creative Space in a World of Schedules, Budgets, and Bosses. And it is published by Harper Business. You want to get a copy of it. Amy, it really has been a delight having you on. I wish you great success, and I hope we get to chat again.
Thanks so much, Stu. To a person who's invented many point Bs yourself, it's a total pleasure.
All right, thanks. It's nice to get a compliment. Laurie, did you get that compliment so we can use that as a clip?
We got it.
Clip?
We have it.
Okay, by the way,
yeah.
Eric Bowling. Oh, sorry, you can listen to Amy. Eric Bowling, one of the five on Fox News Channel, will be here on Monday to talk about his new book, Wake Up America, which is at the top of the bestsellers list. So you won't want to miss one of my few favorites now, The Adwindling on Fox. And that's Eric Bowling. Wishing you all a great weekend. This is Stu Taylor.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
BizTalkRadio.com.